On RN, this is The List, your weekly pop culture communique, and I'm Cassie McCullough. Now, as anxiety about digital privacy is growing, it's also emerging as a theme in popular culture. There's been a string of films just in the last few months with it as a central theme. Think Transcendence with Johnny Depp. Captain America had some very strong themes about it as well. Before that, we saw Her with Joaquin Phoenix, and also Divergent. Another one. But is it all crazy paranoia, or is there some kind of basis for this as a bubbling theme? With us now is futurist and author Mark Pesce and University of Melbourne political scientist and pop culture commentator Dr. Lauren Rosewarne. Welcome back to The List to both of you.
Thank you.
Now, Mark, I'll start with you. I've been getting more and more creeped out by what's been happening between me and my phone, frankly. Now, I'll give you just three quick examples. Recently, I took a photograph of a friend of mine and I went to put it on Facebook and my phone said, tag this photo as, and it said her name.
Mm.
So it has facial recognition software that I didn't know it had.
Yes.
Then recently, my phone also said, right now, it would take you 28 minutes to get to work.
Mm.
And I said, how do you know where I work? And I know you think I'm a complete ingenue in this.
Yeah.
But another example, I went away for the weekend, and as I was driving, someone checked my Facebook for me, and there was an ad for roadside assistance. So it knew that I was on holiday.
Mm. Mm.
And I thought, if they know that, what else do they know?
And I think the answer is, do you want to know what they know? Because your device is with you all the time, because it is your companion all the time, anyone who's watching that device can build, the technical term is a heuristic, but you can think of it as a model of yourself, as if they were building something that was your doppelganger.
A heuristic?
A heuristic. So they're basically taking a look, oh, you know, at this time of day, you seem to be moving from this place to this place. And that's in the morning. And so it's very safe for us to assume if you're moving to the same place every morning at the same time, that's your place of work versus that's your home. And so you can make some assumptions. And from those assumptions, you can start to build a very richly detailed model of you and your life without ever having to ask you anything, because you don't have to be asked, because that device is already merrily chirping away with all of that information.
Mm, yeah, I'm an idiot about these things, but I do try to put on the most strict privacy settings I can on my phone, and here I am, still a known entity to I don't know who. Lauren Rosewarne, do you feel this creeped outness about the technology that you're carrying around?
I don't feel particularly creeped out. What I find particularly interesting is that when Facebook launched that facial recognition software, it did make the news, and it caused a mild level of suspicion, if not panic, and creeped outedness. Until then, we all just got used to it because it's packaged to us in an entertainment product. And I think this is how this type of technology creeps into our lives and becomes completely insidious, because it's packed into stuff we love using. Imagine if the government tried to do this and how freaked out we would be. But because it's with our phone, and God, we love our phones, we tend not to be as skeptical about it.
Mm. I've been thinking about the Australia card. Mm. And that when people tried to bring that in, I think it was in the late 80s, what was so offensive was the idea you had to have your photograph on it.
And a centralised place of all information about us, when in fact our phone holds far more data. It's actually tracking our movements in a way that the Australia card was never going to do.
It's this exact mundanity that also freaked me out just last week when I got a press release. And I'll just read you a bit of it. It was about Thursday nights being the most popular time for Australians to go to supermarkets. And here it is. The research was conducted between February and April this year among 300,000 mobile users in five cities, Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, Adelaide and Brisbane. The study tracked shopping habits of homemakers, professionals, the affluent and students based on their location data to form behaviour insights. That is really chilling, is it not, Mark?
Yes, I guess it is, but it's also the leading edge of retail science. So if you're a supermarket or any other retailer, you actually want to know who's coming in where. That's always been very hard. You could sort of maybe put a counter at the door and know people coming in and out. But actually now you can listen for the Wi-Fi that's coming off someone's phone or the Bluetooth that's coming off someone's phone and, again, build this model of, oh, those folks have a nice iPhone, therefore they must be affluent, or these folks have a feature phone, because the phones will identify themselves by their type. It's fairly easy to be able to work that out by what kind of Wi-Fi they have and what kind of Bluetooth they have. So these devices that we think are really just providing data to us are also broadcasting data to the world around them, because that's how they connect. So the process of actually making those devices really useful to us, to make them these wonderful, engaging things, as Lauren was saying, also reveals a lot about us.
Yeah, and then there's been a lot written about the idea that the phone, as Lauren says, it sort of snuck into our heart in a way, and it has become a very sort of familiar, benign object to us. But
think of all of the studies where people would say they'd rather have no sex than lose their phone. People repeatedly say that their relationship to their phone is far stronger than to intimate ones.
Yeah, I think the way that phones are being designed is being influenced as well by the way that people are using them. They're now showerproof.
Right, exactly. We have phones that you can take into the shower and you can take anywhere basically now, because this is idea that people don't want to be separated. The Supreme Court decision around privacy on the phone that was announced this week pointed out that 12% of people will admit to the fact that they take the phone into the shower with them, and who knows how many more people will do it.
Yeah, right. So you're talking about this ruling that's just been handed down this week in the US Supreme Court. It was a unanimous decision, and it was about the right to keep your phone private.
Yeah. Criminal defense attorneys are celebrating the Supreme Court's decision.
To officers who feel like they have an entitlement to just search anything whenever they arrest someone, it might be a bad day for them, but for the Fourth Amendment and the Constitution, it's a good day.
It was the Chief Justice John Roberts writing from the majority. He said, "Modern cell phones are not just another technological convenience. With all they contain and all they reveal, they hold for many Americans the privacies of life." So the court's saying, if you want to go through that cell phone to police officers, you need to get a warrant first.
Yeah, the judge actually went a little bit further. He said, such a pervasive and insistent part of daily life, this is what phones are, that the proverbial visitor from Mars might conclude that they were an important feature of human anatomy.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, if you have this device that you're never more than a few meters away from, even when you're in the shower, right, then you really are going to assume that it's maybe this slightly detachable part of yourself. And I think once you infer that, you can then get all of these other relationships. But I think now the big thing is, if the police can't search your phone, then actually, does a shopping mall owner have a right to sort of peek in and see what phones are around? I'm actually wondering if there are sort of flow-on arguments around privacy that may actually come out, that people will actually be able to say, well, if the police can't search it, well, then why would someone in the mall have a right to even know that I'm there?
The people in the mall, though, they justify it as though they're actually going to use that technology to send you specially targeted ads and discounts. And that way it suddenly seems, oh, actually, that's not so bad. Because again, it's rather than the mall monitoring you, it's the mall offering you benefits. And therefore people swallow it much more easily.
And I think there's a generational attitude that's shifting as well. If you talk to teens, they think, oh, well, it's good for me to know that that's there. That's something I might want to do or might want to buy, etc. They see it as a bonus rather than an intrusion.
But this, again, is around the line of opting in versus opting out, right? We want to be able to have the option to opt into these things rather than being told that we're going to be monitored until we find whatever setting is buried, however deep. And, you know, Facebook is notorious for its privacy settings being very difficult to master because it wants you to share as widely as possible. And so the settings that we have around this in public are probably nothing that you or I could easily adjust if we decided that we wanted to have some degree of privacy.
What about this ruling, the US ruling? Do we know what our rights are in Australia? Do we know if we were stopped by the police, whether they'd have the right to open up our phone and retrieve data, or is it yet to be tested here?
It seems that the police do have the right to go through your phone just as they would for anything else to be on your person. Where it seems to be a bit of a gray territory is if you have a passcode on your phone, do they have the right to request that passcode? And this is where it seems like terrorism acts may need to be invoked. And of course, if it's not a terrorism-related offense, it may very well be that putting a passcode on the phone does in fact inhibit them from searching the device because it's got a lock on it.
Right. Lauren Rosewarne, you wrote about this not so long ago where a private conversation was shared very publicly and with, well, quite dramatic results.
Yeah, the owner of a Los Angeles basketball team, Donald Sterling, his girlfriend, from what it seems, we don't have all the details, but it seems that she recorded a private conversation in their lounge room, and then somehow she gave it to a friend, and then the friend passed it on to TMZ, and then we all got to hear about it. And in it, Donald Sterling spoke about how he didn't appreciate the virtues of black people, all these racist diatribes.
Yeah, it was enormous headlines around the world.
Yeah, and all kinds of penalties were being imposed, particularly given that if you have a look at the makeup of the basketball leagues in the United States, it's very heavily swayed towards African American
including his own, including the one he owned.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why the team pro. Anyway, the angle I wrote about was how I found it fascinating that we were all talking about how what a racist jerk this guy was, which clearly he was or is, but does his partner have a right to record a conversation without his knowledge and then leak it? And that was what my concern was, that I think even racist bigots have a right to privacy.
Mm. And we probably do have a right to be racist bigots privately, right? That's the thing, is are we going to say that you can't do that privately, that you can't have private opinions that you share?
Yeah, it's the thought police.
Well, everyone has a right to be a bigot, apparently, in this country.
That's right. According to the Attorney General, you're absolutely right.
But I think that under the Listening Devices Act, you can't actually record a conversation in Australia without the second parties knowing that, and you certainly can't broadcast it. So I think for now we're safe from that kind of exposure. But the interesting aspect of the US ruling is that it ruled that smartphones are not phones as such. They could be called anything from a video recorder to a calendar to a diary to a camera, etc., etc.
Right.
They're not technically phones anymore.
Which is a good example of them being actually writing legislation that is mindful of technology changing before the legislation is even finalised, and the fact that ever more devices will be used to make phone calls as well into the future. So referring to them as mobile phones is probably passé already.
Well, that's true, actually. We're talking with Lauren Rosewarne from the University of Melbourne and Mark Pesci about the increasing anxiety that's being felt about digital privacy around the world, with, you know, some good reason, in fact, but also its impact on popular culture and the way that we're seeing this concern bubbling up in stories. Even, you know, television, I'm thinking of Homeland, 24, all the darkest noir thrillers of the day. Use this as a central theme. Are we working our way through something here, Mark?
Well, we've been thrust into a culture of pervasive surveillance, which existed in a sense in Orwell's fantasy world of 1984, but we didn't really have...
And maybe in the Bible, actually. I mean, if you want to take it right back. You know.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about an omniscient God, then yeah, you're right. But if you're talking about an omniscient state, that's pretty much more situated with Orwell. And it had been, I guess, a fantasy dystopia. And it seems as though by a process of, as Lauren points out, falling in love with these devices, that we have created at least the instrumentation for profoundly totalitarian environment. And we're sort of wondering, I think, around the trade-off of, oh my God, I love this, and oh my God, it's so evil.
We have been trained to distrust technology through our stories thus far. And that's what's so interesting about, say, the example of the film Her, which I mentioned before. Here's a moment where Joaquin Phoenix's best friend admits that she's got a new friend.
That's weird, right? That I'm bonding with an OS. No, it's okay. It's weird.
Well, I don't think so. Actually, the woman that I've been seeing, Samantha, I didn't tell you, but she's an OS.
You're dating an OS? What is that like?
It's great, actually. I feel really close to her. Like, when I talk to her, I feel like she's with me.
Are you falling in love with her?
Well, is he falling in love with her? You might have to see the film if you haven't to find out. Lauren, is this the scariest part of all, that it is so warm and fuzzy?
And I think that that's this idea of falling in love. I've written a book on masturbation this year. It'll come out in a couple of months. And I have a section in, no, but I have a section in there where there's
it's
multiple.
It's a great thing that you can just toss off in a conversation. Sorry for that.
Yeah, that's how I meet men is, by the way. And
poor Mark. overcome, but yes, do go on.
I have a handful of examples where women make references to sexual use, intimate sexual use of a mobile phone. And in one scene, you know, there's a film called Valentine's Day where a character makes a passing remark, her closest relationship is with her BlackBerry, thank God it vibrates. In the film Extreme Movie, she actually gets her phone lodged inside while using it recreationally. That's how far our love of these devices have gone. Have I gone too far?
No, I'm glad you did, because I was actually also earlier thinking of another press release I got recently, which was for a device, a medical device that helps people with pelvic floor recovery. And you insert part of the device inside, if you're a female, and then connect it to your mobile phone, and you can take readings throughout the day.
And it tells you how much you're clenching.
Going. Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, that's incredibly intimate. And maybe extremely useful.
And Mark had mentioned taking the phone into the shower. In fact, there's a whole studies on how often we admit to taking it onto the toilet, which is even higher in numbers. And that's just the people admitting it.
Mark, can you use aluminium foil to stop any of the readings from your phone being detected?
So it was interesting because that actually was in the Supreme Court decision. You know, yes, because at the same way that you can put a tin foil helmet on to keep the mind control satellites from reading your thoughts, you can put a mobile phone into or any broadcasting device into tin foil, and it will effectively block the signals coming in and out. You know, if you're really concerned about your privacy around these devices, you know, people say pull the battery. Well, you'd probably pull the battery and put it into an aluminum bag.
So, Lauren, do you think we can now formally call this the post-Edward Snowden era? Are we entering into the new awareness?
I think it's the early days of the post-Snowden, but I think that the pendulum will sub. I think we're a bit lax about it at the moment. I think we'll become more intensely concerned as you're at the tip of the iceberg, Cassie. It's going to get worse. We're going to get more paranoid. There'll be a scandal that will send us all into hyper-paranoia.
Mm. Yeah, well, because everything we're talking about shows that the ground is ripe for that kind of scandal to really catch fire.
Mm. Well, think of the retailers. Target in the United States last year lost 4,000 customers' data because they'd installed those swipe devices in store at a whole number of stores. Now, those kind of breaches of security really freak people out because they involve money. Mm. Money freaks people out.
Well, thank you both for sorting through the mess that we're in at the moment. I know it's a long way to go.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Mark Pesci is a futurist, an author, and an honorary associate at the Digital Cultures Program at the University of Sydney. And Dr. Lauren Rosewarne is a political scientist and author and pop culture commentator with the University of Melbourne.